Hello, Katie. Hello,
Oh, there we
hello.
go.
There we go.
Welcome to the spiritual.
Involution.
Woohoo! We haven't done one in a bit.
It
How have you
has been a bit. It's
been?
so, I'm well and peaceful and thrilled to hear your voice. How's it been going for you and your family?
Good, good. We're still enjoying the mountains, and we're about to head on a RV trip up to Mount Glacier and the Tetons. And so we're
Beautiful.
pretty excited about that. And that's it.
How long will
That's
your trip be?
I think it's going to be about a little over 2 weeks. It'll be a nice adventure. Yeah. What do you got
Super
planned?
exciting. Well, right now I'm at the Delta, about 50 yards from our boat. Although we're not able to go on it because Mauricio injured his leg and he's currently in a leg brace and
Oh
he will see
no.
an orthopedic surgeon, I think, tomorrow.
That's a bummer because I know he loves those water sports.
Does. He definitely does. And although I will say that because the pain was so great, they gave him a temporary supply of opioids, and he is really funny on opioids.
Nice. You'll have to videotape that one and send me a
Yeah,
little
he's totally,
snippet.
he's been the neighborhood entertainment.
Awesome. Well, he's already pretty entertaining without being on drugs, so I'm sure it's just even more
You
more
are spot on.
Mauricio.
You are spot
Awesome.
on.
Well, do you have a topic
How's
for
your
today?
world?
I haven't really thought of anything.
Well, what's alive in you right now?
There's lots of stuff alive in me right now. I was making that little clip for your sermon because I had recorded it, but I hadn't put it together, and I thought when I listened to it, when I listened to your sermon this week, I had just gotten back from a little hike that John and I did. We actually got a babysitter for the first time in, I don't, whenever this whole thing started. And we decided to go hike Mount Rose, and there's a little waterfall up there at the top. And I sat by it for quite a bit, and I had one of those downloads, that you always talk about and what your sermon was about, more about how to adjust your instrument so you feel connected to the source. And in that moment of being by the waterfall, I became keenly aware of like my connection to everything. Meaning, in a way, I wondered if I imagined, like, what if I lived here? Like, this was my home in the forest, and I was dependent on this water source. Would I revere it more? Would I revere what connection with this waterfall? Because I know it actually gives me water and the life that it produces around and the deer that it calls in to its source so I can eat. Like, and I wonder how we live today where, water just comes out of a faucet or we get meat from a supermarket that even though the connection is there, we've been separated from it to a point where that download process with nature is obscured and harder for us to sometimes get a hold of. Did that make sense?
Completely. I was following every word.
Yeah, so after I went on that hike, I tuned in after you had already gone through the 9:30 and the 11. And I was listening and I thought, wow, this is ringing so true with how I just experienced life. Like I went out and I felt, I didn't have cell reception. I didn't check my phone. I just sat there in it and it felt like I was closer to it. And your sermon was about that, at least from what I gathered, mostly about how it's always talking to us, right? And it's more in us. It's not that it's choosing not to talk to us right now. It's in everything, right? So it's a source that's not able to be stopped. It's more in our own body, in our own mind that disconnects or isn't able to really get to that deeper place where the waterfall's flowing. So that's what's alive in me. Amongst
So
other
the
things.
question,
Well, they kind
okay, what are the other things?
go in line. I've been having a bit of a rough 2 weeks just because, well, a lot of things, but a good friend of ours, little boy, passed away. His name was Lucas, and we went to a memorial service outside, you know, as safe as we could to celebrate his life. And it got me thinking about his spirit, because he had a really unique spirit, one that, I mean, all children kind of have it, but he had something more, I don't know, I can't put words to it, but it was like a sparkle in his eye that just felt like he had something glowing from him. And I've been trying to feel that more, like living life through that kind of childhood wonderment where he, you know, like you feel everything, you're in it. And in a way to honor him and to also, it's a check back of like what life is really about and how privileged we are just to be here every day experiencing it. And sometimes with what's going on in the world right around us right now, with all that there is, you lose that, like that really base level core of just being alive, right? So that's calling to me too, which is, it's kind of in alignment with the waterfall story too. It's all there.
Here where I am spending most of my week days when I'm not in San Jose, transmitting the services digitally, I'm in the middle of farm country and I get to watch the fields. In the last, I don't know, it's been only 2 months. When we first arrived here, the field across the gravel road, it's this massive field, and it was wheat. And when we arrived, I think it was in late May, mid-May, when we arrived, the wheat was golden, and like within 2 days, the wheat had been harvested. And then within a week, the stalks under the wheat were cut and mowed and rowed, put into rows, and then baled as hay. And then the hay was, the bales of hay were taken away. And then the field was plowed and new rows were made and corn was planted. And then suddenly there was just earth, just dirt and rows of water. And now there are rows and rows and rows of corn stalks that are about 4 to 6 inches tall. It's amazing to watch the change happen so quickly. And it's because I spend a lot of time now outdoors just staring at the dirt. It's amazing to watch how it's always alive and always in motion. And I may not notice it because I'm very busy doing, I don't know, whatever it is I think that's important. And that moves me. I feel very peaceful around it. And hearing the birds talk, the birds wake me up every day.
Aww.
And at first it wasn't a friendly alarm. And now I'm peaceful with the birds waking me up. And I'm finding that I'm getting into a rhythm of this this very rural area where I'm starting to go to sleep when the birds go to sleep and wake up when the birds wake up. And it's, I don't have any words for it right now, except the sermon and the message to which you were just referring, the title being, "Are you having trouble getting messages from the divine?" I realize sometimes I might be having difficulty getting messages from the divine. And it's not because, as you said, the divine is not broadcasting or communicating. It may be that I'm not tuning into it, or I'm tuned into a different station. Sometimes a station is drama and urgency and upset and discord. And there's plenty of that. I mean, that's all very real. But there's also a powerful, really powerful drive for life that is not stopped. It's not stopped. And so I like your waterfall. And I'm really excited about your trip.
Me too. I keep feeling like the answer is in this place for almost it all. Like if we could each find that connection that you're speaking of when you see the land change, or when I'm experiencing the waterfall, or reflecting on just the cycle of life and the beauty that's in a child, it just brings a sense of connection that's beyond form in a way. Like, it's beyond our human identities that we're grappling with right now in all forms, like our identity with being at war against a virus, or our identity with being inside a skin sack, you know, that sounded gross, but a skin, you know, like it's just, it's superficial in a way. And we're missing something so much richer that I think would draw us all in. Like, it would make our brotherhood and sisterhood more apparent if we could all connect individually in that space, because the separation isn't there. It's like impossible to feel, because we're all part of this system, this working system that is always changing, that is always evolving, and that we're so intricately involved in. Even though we live in a way that makes you feel like you are an individual, and you are to some extent, but you're not at a deeper, you know, a deeper place. And I long for that message to get out to people in a sense that is beyond this feeling of just being a hippie person saying la la things. Like, the gravity of it is like, to me, really profound in a way that it solves potentially an existential threat that we might be experiencing here soon. You know, we need to come together for so many reasons. We cannot be pulling apart the way that we are. And the one thing that does that is God, is the source. And for me, that is nature. You know, I don't know, there's nothing else that we completely share in that way in my mind. Huh. And when I'm in that space, it just seems so clear that, but it is hard to put in words. Like, I can't do it. It's hard because it's like such a profound feeling of, wow, I'm just this tiny speck on this tiny planet working with everything around me. And all that we're fighting for is just, we're missing a big point. We're missing it. And I don't want us to miss it. I don't think we can afford to miss it. Yeah.
I think we're headed for some really good times ahead. And, you know, it's like, I have never felt so good as I have right after feeling so bad. I have never felt more alive as I have immediately after being very sick. I have never felt so happy and joyful as I have immediately after having a sorrow or a meltdown or a discordant interaction with another human. This interesting time, the way we as a society seem to be segmenting and separating and entrenching in camps, I suspect on the other side of this is going to be a really good renaissance. I'm pretty darn sure of it. So my focus right now is to see what's happening, or my interpretation of what's happening, without making it mean anything. I'm just seeing it and noticing it and observing it, because this too will pass. This period will pass.
I hope,
and I'm
going to
be part of the solution.
Yes, you are. You're very steadfast in your position. I keep starting little fires all over the place, getting people mad at me.
You know, Katie, I've probably mentioned it before. My relationship is super amazing to me, and not for the least reason of which is because I blew it up a dozen, 13 years ago. You know, very early on, I pretty much said F you and marched out and triumphantly, indignantly turned my back on it. And a couple of days after doing that, I realized, wow, I'm really giving up a great opportunity here. I'm not sure I want to do that. And then I wasn't sure that he was even interested in going forward, considering the temper tantrum I had had. And he, being who he is, was like, sure, let's try this. And almost every day I have a recollection of how bad it felt to have almost given that up, which makes the joy of what's present more joyful, because it's juxtaposed to the contrast of the sorrow. Is that making sense to you?
No. I mean, kind of. I mean, I'm talking, I think we might be talking about slightly different things, or maybe not. For
no,
me, I
no,
have
I'm
a...
thinking.
Go on.
This period where people appear to be attacking each other, people appear to be completely not listening to each other, or completely unteachable or unapproachable. This period, on the other side of it, this period will always exist in our memory. And so when we do get back in each other's camps, when we do shake hands and embrace each other again, which we will, I don't know how that will happen, but we will. And it will be the period of sadness and anxiety. This period will always be present as a contrast, which will make the getting back together again the sweeter, because it will have been experienced next to the sorrow and the division.
Got it. Yeah.
And that's why I was using the, poorly, obviously, the metaphor of I've never felt so alive as I have right after being very sick.
Right.
I think it was Robert Fulghum in one of his books. He said the best thing he ever ate was a soda cracker and a bite of chicken soup. And that's because it came right after being super sick with the flu and vomiting and diarrhea and not being able to keep anything down. And that first bite of food that he was able to keep down was among the sweetest because it was contrasted
right
to the horrible period before it.
I feel like I haven't gotten to the sweet fruit yet.
Oh.
And I feel like a little bit like I'm on the precipice of wanting to divide myself into these two worlds that I'm living in. One being up at the waterfall, right? Like that's my immediate life. That's me with my feet in the soil. That's me breathing real air. That's me interacting with the life forms like around me, right? And I could very easily remove myself into that place. And maybe that's where I should reside. But then there's another part of me that sees what's happening in the world and the landscape that's being cultivated. And I feel like I want to speak out for what I think I'd like the future to unfold as. And I'm worried that certain liberties right now are being just violated and that the silent majority isn't speaking up. So it appears like this is a reality and I just don't think it is. And I'm trying my best to do that in a constructive way without throwing anybody under the bus. However, it's exhausting. And I wonder if it's even worthwhile being that voice, or should I just retreat? Should I just simply retreat and be there in my space? Or is it part of our civil duty, or somehow some part of me feels called to be like, I don't want to be not voicing my opinion because I'm afraid of a little backlash or I'm afraid of hurting somebody's feelings. I'm not targeting anybody, but what I get in return, I definitely see that I'm taking a slightly unpopular view in some places. And all I want to do is have a dialogue about it, like a constructive dialogue. And I'm feeling frustrated in the lack of ability to do that with people. Like, it just seems like we're so fired up with passion that we can't objectively look and discuss facts without the emotion attached, which is what I think really needs to happen so we don't make rash decisions that are going to affect the landscape of America and possibly the world. But it seems like my little bit might just be irrelevant and maybe I should just protect my own happiness and my own being. And that is what I do mostly. I don't know. Do you feel my conflict? Am I explaining it right?
I'm following it. And I think what's going on now is we have it's an impossible thing to do because the current popular construct is virtue signaling. So people are signaling that they are a particular way, but they're signaling it because then it makes them acceptable in the eyes of society as they see them, not necessarily that it's authentic or real or true for them, but we don't want to be cast out. So we might put a sign on our lawn, or we might take a stand in what we say, or we might attack what someone else says. Not necessarily because it's real and true and right for us, but because there's a dark thing going on underneath, and that is we don't want to be cast out or cut off. So you can't even talk to that. because you're not actually having an authentic conversation with a person. What you're seeing is people are arguing so that everyone can see their virtue.
Do you think people are aware of that, or is it a subconscious biology, like to not want to be cast out? So you're going to them.
It's a mob mentality. There is a mob mentality. And that's why I believe people will finally say what they think when the vote happens.
Yeah.
That's where you're going to see. And people are going to be all upset again, and they're going to be like really surprised. And I'm not the tiniest bit surprised.
Yeah.
Whichever way you think the vote's going to go.
I agree, because I don't know. All I know is when I see something that I feel isn't right, I feel compelled to put my opinion out there just so it's another narrative to be seen. Because I realize, in my view, some of the problem is when you only see one view, you believe that's the only view. And sometimes there's another view to take in, and maybe you don't even believe it wholeheartedly, but perhaps there's a portion of it you could take in and you find humanity in, or you find some validity in it, or you say, maybe this is worth like exploring a little bit. I hadn't thought of that side before. Not willing to go and say it's correct, but I'm really looking for more dialogue in this conversation, and it's just falling on deaf ears mostly. There's a few that have come forward, and we do have this talk, you know, like I have with you and a few others. And maybe it's something I need to engage with people more one-on-one than the social media part. Because I feel like it is keyboard warriors, or it's people lashing out at personal attacks. Like, it's at me instead of at the conversation that I posted about or want to talk about. It's like that separation's harder to get, I guess, maybe in a social media stance. But on the flip side, I don't want the narrative that's happening to take hold to a place where the other side is silenced because we let it ride out for so long without anybody pushing back at all.
Oh, I don't think they will be silenced. They will find a way to speak, but it may not be the way people want them to speak. I actually think they'll do it in the voting booth.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I was thinking about that, and I've gotten so much grief for saying I want to vote for a third party. I might as well be Hitler, apparently, but I just can't bring myself to vote for either of them. And I feel like it's the responsibility of the parties to represent the people, not for me to acquiesce to whatever form of lesser evil. I think that doesn't seem what I believe in, but I get their point. I'm wondering, let's say Trump wins. I mean, let's just pretend he wins. Would the liberal side be able to look back and say, how did we miss the boat? Like, how did we not hear? How did we not? I mean, obviously, to me, Trump is so bad that he should be an easy loss. Like, this should be a shoo-in. And if the liberals cannot figure out how to beat this guy, what are we able to look internally as somebody who used to at least consider themselves a liberal? Are we able to see why are we not connecting to the people of the United States enough where we cannot get this man out of office? That's what will we have that self-reflection, or will we push back and blame other people again?
Well, I'm noticing in social media feeds that most of the conversation is about 2016, and no conversation has altered in 4 years.
Right. Yeah. Cause I mean, really, why did 2016 happen too? We never really got to the root of that. Obviously, something is brewing in this climate here in America. That's something is not connecting to the people, and we're not changing anything drastically. Well,
so with doing my best to stay neutral politically in this conversation right now with you, it occurs to me that the current method we have for communications are at our fingertips, not from our mouths. And our fingertips have the ability to very quickly exit people. So we've never, I think either side has really asked questions of each other or had any learning. See, there was a time when if you were sharing the same house, you had to work things out. That's why marriage worked for so long, because because to leave was not an option. So you pretty much had to work things out. And we no longer have to do that because it's very easy to anonymously just unfriend, defriend, block, disappear, cut off, or make up stories about people, which creates a rift. Now, I'm not going to talk about anybody else. Let me just talk about me. It's very tempting when I read something that I don't like to suppress it or to deny it or remove it or say that people shouldn't say that. So I myself have to be really aware that if my values are that I'm interested in a holistic view, in a holistic conversation, if I'm interested in a holistic community in which all sides are necessary, all views are required, not necessarily liked, not all views are necessarily liked, but all views have a role to play in a holistic, healthy community. If I'm not willing to do that, I can't talk about anybody else. And I frequently face how easy it is for me to just, oh, forget them, click, gone. And so I'm doing my best not to make either side wrong. I'm doing my best to face my own demons, you know, my own propensity for ease, realizing that we are clan creatures and I want to be in relationship with people. And yeah. I know from my own experience that my relationship with Mauricio works so beautifully for us because we have shared values and we have almost identical habits, but each one of us views the world very distinctly. And I often want him to be more like me. And he often wants me to stop being so much like me. The truth is, it creates a exponential strength that would not be there if we were both exactly the same. So that would be my big query is, what are we inventing if you want everybody to think exactly the same way?
I have concern with that too. I mean, that pretty much hits it on the head. That's where I find myself entering into unpopular conversation. It isn't that we disagree. It's that we're taking away the ability to disagree.
Katie, like, I'm going to step on your words. It's not unpopular conversation. It's unwelcome.
Yes, they're very unwelcome.
It's unwelcome.
And I appreciate, for example, I have a uncle, Art, who is very liberal. Actually, he's more libertarian. We used to battle back and forth, especially when I was super duper liberal. Now I'm just mediocre liberal. But
now you're just a hippie. Yeah.
But he would articulate his points with facts. And it actually got me thinking about, oh, I never thought about that. And I appreciate different views when they are said in that way.
Talking about facts.
Well, yeah. Like statistics on certain things. And I'm like, wow, okay. And what I'm noticing more is that I'm unsure of what laws have we passed? What laws do we want to pass? Like, government wise, it seems like we're turning into some emotional theatrical show. Even when I tried to listen to the Barr testimony the other day, I was like, this doesn't seem right. Like, this seems like we're in some wonky land of showboatingness in hopes to get a highlight on CNN or Fox News or something. Like, politics should be kind of boring. You're talking about what laws you want to pass, yeah, what effect true. The law has had, and like all this other stuff that's amplified and made people out to be these weird people of, it's like, I just want to scratch all that out and like get a board out and look at exactly what has happened, what's been passed, what was the result, what's not been passed, what's the result, what's been taken away, what does this person want to do, what will it affect? And I just don't know where that is anymore. It's all just seems like I'm watching the Kardashians, but it's political.
It is kind of like that. In my own head, it's like that.
Yeah. So,
and I still have hope as I watch that tree right outside my window. The wind is blowing it, and that tree has been here a long time.
Right.
And life continues to present itself.
And then you get pulled back into that picture where it seems like, why am I getting all riled up about this? It's not, I'm losing sight of the bigger picture of humanness, of humanity, of life, of nature, of connection. Like all of that is being sucked away from me because I get into these little pockets where I lose that space. And I don't want to lose that space because I really think that is where we're meant to be.
You know that I thrill at listening to extreme radio on both sides, far left and far right. I thrill. I mostly read news from the middle, but I thrill at listening to talk radio. And I find that they speak very similarly, but they have different sets of enemies, if you will. But I find that there's really such wisdom and workability on both sides of those. And in my head, I'm doing my best to embrace both. And it's not always easy, of course, because some of it are, more easily reflect my personal tastes or inclinations. But I'm really learning in this period of time to say, tell me more. I'm doing my best to not delete, block, cut out, unless I have to. And I'm not saying that if you have to, that that's wrong, but I'm just talking about for myself. I'm doing my best to not cut out, but to ask more. And mostly I will not do that in a public forum because that then gets to be virtue posturing, virtue signaling. Yeah. I want to stay away from that because that's distracting. That's a battle that will never be won. But something just came up to me in my head. I remembered something Mauricio said to me when I was facing a dilemma about having to have a hard conversation with somebody. He said, David, you can't say the wrong thing to the right person. And you can't say the right thing to the wrong person.
Right. That's true.
There are some people, you, no matter what you say, it'll never be right for them. You cannot. And that's when I realized this is a waste of my breath. I'd rather go out to that waterfall or get in a motorhome and drive to the Grand Tetons or watch the corn grow across the gravel road.
Me too. And I think from my perspective, I've given up trying to really change people's minds. I'm looking at it more like an art piece that I'm just putting out there to change the ripples, to change the structure of the, you know, to just put a little flavor to make sure it's, if that's my truth, then it's not maybe one that's so widely spread that, all right, I'm putting it out there just to let people know it's not a, it might not be so crazy or there is other ways to think. And right now it seems like there's a monopoly going on where people might become confused with the idea that, wow, everyone's on this boat right now. I guess I better get on the boat. And I'm like, no, you don't have to get on the boat. There is something else out there. Take it or leave it. But I just want you to see it and you decide. But yeah, the idea of actually changing someone's mind or anything is kind of something I've tried to give up because it's, like you said, it's just not always feasible.
No. So I'm doing my best to manage what I can, which is just myself.
Right.
That's what I'm doing my best. And ironically, because I heard you say you didn't want to live in a bubble. I remember you saying that. But I have influence. Everybody has influence. We all influence other people. Some of us have a vaster audience and some of us have a pretty intimate audience, but we all influence people. And the way we influence them most, I remember my mother said something like, it's not what you say, but what you do, like how you are, how you're being. That's how I want to influence people.
Right. So, there's some so saying
my,
like
my,
that.
My life is a test. Go on.
There's something like that. I think I remember hearing about teachers or, you know, you might not remember exactly what someone taught you, but you'll remember how they made you feel.
How they made you feel.
And so that kind of, that is true.
And you are very successful at that. I always feel loved and heard and curious when you speak. I always feel curious. Like, I want to know more. I want to know more. Tell me more.
Well, I love the way you're. Time for that today. I love the way you're navigating it. You're always, you know, calling in for people to understand each other's stories and to hear each other and to be present with one another, even if you disagree. And I see that, and I think that's a really valuable message. And you've always, you and Mauricio have always lived that. You've always extended, I think, that courtesy to everybody that you've ever met. So you are achieving your goal, I'd say.
Well, thank you, Katie. You and your family are too. Tell me, so you're going to the Tetons, and are you going to Glacier Park, Glacier National Park?
Yes. We're going there.
That's in Montana, right?
Right. Yep.
So you're going through Yellowstone?
I think we're about 80% sure we'll stop in Yellowstone. We are going right through it. I've been told it's kind of a madhouse, and if that's the case, we'll just skip it. We're kind of not wanting to do any tourists, like, you know, where there's just tons of people. We would like to stay off the grid as much as possible. But I hope to see Yellowstone.
I'm going to step in here. You have to drive through it. It's only a couple of hours. Going from the Tetons towards Glacier. Just drive through it. Even if you don't stop, you have to drive through it.
Yeah, that's true. We'll do that at least.
It's the world's biggest, it's the world's biggest caldera. You know that that's a volcano. The whole park.
Yeah.
You should do some research on that. If that blew.
So there's that big geyser, Old Faithful. You remember, you know that
yes.
one?
Yes. Yep.
And
yep.
Last time we were there before kids, it was John and I, and this is just such a John thing. He would get by it and he's like, I think it's about to blow, everybody. And everyone would come running and he had no idea when it's about to blow. You have to wait like 15, 20 minutes. And like, and I'm like, John, I'm going to pretend I do not know you. But everyone's all excited and they're like, there's no eruption. It's just John. Basically,
it's just John. It's just John stirring people up.
Just stirring people up. But it was funny. That's my biggest memory of the place.
When do you return?
I don't know. August to something, 15th, 16th, something like that.
All right. So I will see you. I'll see you in the ethers after that then.
All right. And I'll report back all the nature.
Thank you.
All right. Say hi to Mal.
And I look forward to getting I will. And my love to your family. Have a great trip. And everyone who's been participating with us on this podcast, thank you for joining us and letting us join you.
Yes. Thank you.
And be the kind of person you want other people to be.
I like that. Good ending.
Me too. Thanks, Katie.
Thank you.
Thank you for the spiritual involution. I really enjoy it.
Likewise. Bye.
Bye.
Hello, David.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fantastic.
It feels like forever since I've heard your voice.
You know, I had the same experience about yours.
I know.
How did you get that photograph of you that you posted announcing this podcast? It's got you sitting on the side of the road with your hippie boots and your amazing hair. Who took that picture?
Oh, I did. I was actually trying to catch the sunrise when we went on our RV trip. I think it was, I'm getting all these national parks confused in my mind, but I believe it was Crater Lake and we had a campground and I got up really early because the day before I had spotted this area. I was like, oh, the sun's going to rise here. I know it. It's going to be amazing. And so I got up early and I did that. And I was like, man, I wish I could take a photo of my kids here. So I was like, you know what? I don't think I've taken any photos of myself. And I kind of really was sitting there, like just looking out at the scene. And so it kind of looks like cheesy in a way, but it was kind of a photo of what I was really doing and thinking about how I should just document what I'm really doing in this beautiful area that just, you know, you can't help but feel humbled by. Yeah. So that is what I did. You have a timer. I have a timer on my camera. So I actually just put it on a stump and then just press to go. Yeah.
It's glorious. It's really beautiful.
Thank you. Well, I guess we should say welcome to the spiritual
involution.
Involution.
Tell us, Katie, what is the spiritual involution? What does that mean to you? Because I know that terms and definitions tend to morph and evolve.
Still means what I think it meant for me, at least in the beginning, which is this inward look at yourself, at involution, so I can evolve and expand in my own home, in my own place, in my own soul, so that hopefully we can trickle that out externally. That's sort of how I take it. What about you?
Thank you for asking. As I endeavor to unfold or unroll or evolve, I must also involve. So I think the definition remains the same. I want to spiritually evolve, which means there must be some involution that precedes evolution. So that's what we're doing. We're involving ourselves in a conversation about spirituality.
Do you think a spiritual evolution would entail everyone taking a deep involution internally for our collectiveness to then evolve?
Well, yes, and I have the firm belief that we're all sharing the same spirit or the same mind, if you will. Therefore, if one of us is doing it on some level and in some measure, everyone is doing it. So I don't know if we necessarily need, like in the physical world, there's a critical mass. I think in the spiritual world, one person who's very clear is a majority. So I think it's sufficient. Even biblical and other spiritual texts will lead us to the importance of even two people coming together are unstoppable.
I like that. I have a vision of what you're saying, and then I have a contradictory vision almost of where I see an involution of two people being a catalyst for other people to take the involution. But I have this vision of the second coming of Christ almost being a universal coming of each individual taking upon themselves this rise of consciousness, that once we all do get there, it would be a whole new paradigm.
Where's there?
I think, you know, like biologically, right? There's a time when there was just these single-celled organisms, and then they collectively came together, right? And then something evolved from that, a creature, and then the human. And it seems like perhaps what if there was another leap where we are like the single-celled organisms and we're waiting to come together to finally realize that we actually aren't divided, that we aren't separate, that we are one thing, the way you're talking about it. But conceptually, I don't know if we're, well, conceptually we might understand it actually, but I'm wondering if we need to reach that level where we take our mind out of it and we actually are it in that full, and you know, that feeling like how I was feeling when I was looking for the sunrise, that full encompassment of oneness with your surroundings, with nature, with each other. If that, like the amoebas coming together, would that, is there a leap where then the divisiveness ends?
Well, I've been thinking about, you use the word divisiveness, and that's what just woke me. Divisiveness exists inside of me. Like if I see the world as divided, then I'm going to see the world in a particular way. Whether or not the world really is that way, that's the way I will see it. And I will get evidence for it, and that will be, it will be my experience as being real. Before you use the word divisive, I was listening to you and I was wondering, is there any part in me that believes there's something wrong with the world right now that has to be fixed or stopped or changed? That's my spiritual work. Not necessarily that there's a destination like the second coming or the world's going to be better when blank happens. Can I have an experience of a perfect world right now? Now, this will probably cause alarm or outrage, or people to now just sort of check out of this podcast because they're like, oh yeah, he's a crazy guy or insane.
But I have a a question here.
Please, go on.
Could I be secure in this moment thinking it's a perfect world in the idea that evolution is coming, that we are constantly a mode of change, and in order for the change to occur, this moment is necessary and thus perfect, but not to mean that this is actually perfect. Like I listened to your sermon the other day about, I'm not going to pretend it's Pollyanna-ish. I can see the fear. I can see the divisiveness. And yet it is perfect because maybe that's what's necessary. It's needed. So that's where I'm wondering. Like, I don't necessarily think there's anything wrong in this moment, but I think it's a moment that's needed for something to rise out of.
Is it needed? Like if that doesn't happen, there will be some unrequitedness?
Well, I suppose each way it goes, this is sort of where free will comes in, I think. It could go either way, and in either way, it might be perfect, right? It might be the way it's supposed to be. Personally, I think that we're in a time where we have to choose one direction, or we will cease to be as a species soon, like within a few hundred years. So in my mind, my personal will would be for us to learn to not do that, to be in a harmonious, more of a harmonious situation with our planet, with each other. That's my free will. And I feel like being here as a soul in this body can affect that direction. Just like we were talking about two people, it only takes two people being clear in that to make a change. So there's this dichotomy that I feel between sitting here and just being okay with what is, and also sitting here being okay with what is while also moving it in a direction that I think would be more peaceful, which to me is our truest nature. Those two things rub for me a little bit while I see beauty in each of them, but there's always paradox, right? We're always talking about how there's always paradox.
I'm finding myself right now fully alive, because whenever I'm engaged in an exploration with you, I actually have the freedom to really explore ideas. It's one of the gifts that is Katie Burke. You really do create an environment where I can explore, where I don't have to defend or protect or prove. So I have the experience when you ask a question that you're really asking the question, which causes me to really look. Now, in the world as I've assessed it, now that's not necessarily the world that is, it's just my view. There are a lot of people who are living lives in their heads and not living their life in their life. They're literally living their life in their head. It's really not showing up in their life. And they're not necessarily present to what is. They're constantly outraged about what isn't or what they think is going to be. But they're not really.
Is there a difference is there a difference between living in your head and living in your heart?
We could have a conversation about that. And I would say that there's a third option. There's living in my head, which means in ideation, in concepts, thoughts, as opposed to living in my life, which is in my body, in the food that's in front of me, in this cup of coffee, in the conversation I'm having with you. So there's the life in my head, which is a life of imagination, or the life of reality.
And so where I'm trying to figure out is I like the life of reality, and I like the life in my head sometimes. I do like the power to turn it off. I don't like when it's going without me saying to go. And then I like the life of right now, but it seems void of emotion. And sometimes I'm in a spot feeling life, like I'm in life and I'm having a visceral heart feeling. And sometimes that's telling me there's a pain here, I want to help it. Or sometimes it's joy, or sometimes what is that in the whole organization of where to be? Is that something to move you? Or is that something to sit in? Is that something to be aware of?
I don't know. While you were talking, I was thinking about Tess. Really, Tess, your daughter. For those of you who don't know, Tess is one of Katie's children. And Tess is at that age where Imagine any child who's a toddler, or between toddler and kindergarten, let's say, and that they have the ability to cause adults to be entranced. I'm like a cheerful child has the power to alter everything. I've noticed that if I stood in front of a toddler and made a herky jerky movement with a smile on my face, like I'm playing this mirror game, they would immediately mirror it back with a smile on their face. They just jump right into the game. Is that mostly true, Katie, or not?
Yeah, for sure.
Exactly. So I'm not sure if this has anything to do with what you wanted to talk about, but it's what's present for me right now is being present to life as a game right now requires me to actually be present for life right now without the mental gymnastics of figuring out, is this a good thing, a bad thing? Do I have time for this? What a waste of time. Don't they realize the world is burning and there's a civil rights unrest and there's so much going on in my head that is not based on reality.
Right. That resonates because that also allows you to feel in the moment.
So let's go back to, is that your heart?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you meant by heart?
Yeah.
Yeah. The picture of you, that picture I saw on Facebook, is indicative of what I think I hear you say. Because when I look at the picture, that woman was up to something. She was in life. Even if what she was thinking about is the timing happening, has the timer clicked, has the picture shot, when's the sun coming up? I wish my kids were here. But she was fully present on the side of that road in that state park just before the sun came up. Many of us are not. We're on this big countdown for the end of the world, for elections in November, whichever way people view it. We're on this, like something terrible is about to happen. And when we continue this idea that something terrible is about to happen, we should not be surprised when something terrible happens. I was just reading, I have to dig it out. I don't know from where it came. Joel Osteen, he would be on the right of middle, let's say, Christian on the more conservative, let's say, viewpoint. And I like, I often read stuff that he posts just because there's some timeless and eternal spiritual wisdom that's presented in a very useful kind of form. Now, in particular, I'm pointing to a quote that I saw on his Facebook page, and it was about, Scripture will tell us that we will eat the fruit of our words.
You know, that's so interesting that you just said that, because at night I have been reading to Tess and Noah Greek mythology.
Yes.
And I had, each chapter is about a person. It starts with Gaia, Mother Nature. Then it goes to Uranus, Father of Heaven, who they married. And then Cronus, Zeus, and Hestia. And I just read Hestia and I was like, wow, I am Hestia. I feel Hestia so much.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know if you recall much about Greek philosophy or mythology, but what's interesting and what you just said just totally triggered it is that there's these parables, right? And for example, Uranus became so fearful that his children were going to overcome him, that they were trapped inside Gaia. He kept him in there. He's like, you cannot get out and attack me. And so his own fear produced the outcome of Cronus coming out and harming Uranus. Uh-huh. Then Cronus became the father to Rhea, and Cronus himself became fearful of the same thing that his father was that caused that retaliation. So uh-huh. the fear produced him to eat his children. He literally ate his children until Rhea fooled him and gave him a stone and let Zeus live. Then Zeus comes back and he makes Cronus throw up all his children who become the Olympians to fight the Titans. Hestia was one of the sisters that was in Cronus's belly. And she has this part in the book where she's describing her life in the belly of Cronus, darkness, and she's rubbing against her brothers and sisters, not really knowing who they are, but somehow feeling this vague connection to them of love, but yet yearning for something clearer, something more sustainable, something she, it was like a lack she couldn't define, but it was there. And then she came out, you know, she was hurled out of Cronus's mouth, and Zeus was there and telling her all of a sudden that you guys have to fight me now against the Titans. And she was spawned into this world of war, which she didn't want. And she's like, I don't want this. This is not what I was yearning for in the darkness of my father's belly. And she isolated herself from it all. She's like, I'm not going to be part of it. I'm not going to be part of you, Zeus. I'm not going to be part of the Titans or the Olympians. And she went inward and became the goddess of hearth, which is fire, warmth in the home. And so everybody had like an altar for her inside the home that was the light, that was the love. And she just didn't partake in any side. And I was like, that's so awesome. So I'm really enjoying Greek mythology, and I'm a fan of Hestia, but it reminded me of your quote. Did that make sense?
So we will eat the fruit of our words. Some it's from Isaiah 3.
Right.
Sometimes it's interpreted, eat the fruit of our doing or the fruit of our labor, but the fruit of our words, what is it we're saying? So I'm really grateful to have this time with you, Katie, so I can on purpose stop and ask myself, what have I been saying about the world? I need to be really careful.
So. Yeah. And what do you, that's an iPhone. So do you, with that in mind, what are you saying in the world? I get how it can produce the outcome that you don't want, right? You're eating, the fear is causing the fear. But then do you deny a reality that's existing and become a fake Pollyanna to reverse and say things?
Let's be real about this. What is reality? So much of what I think is reality really isn't reality. It's my view.
Is it?
Is it hot or is it cold? No, it's a particular degree.
Yeah. So, but I
if
mean,
you look,
you still,
I saw a series of maps. I was at a friend's house yesterday, and in their bathroom was the most remarkable book. And I had to take it out of the bathroom, else I would have been in there too long. And this book was nothing but stories about the world viewed through maps. So how big is Africa in reality? And then it showed different cutouts of different maps that fit into it. And you suddenly see, oh my God, North America, South America, most of Europe fits into the size of Africa. And one of them showed the United States and the world who believes that global warming is worrisome. And it showed each state and country by percentage of people who believed that it was worrisome. And California was red hot. Like it literally was the reddest, it was the reddest outline on the map, which showed that the conversation is very alive in California. Now, I'm just using that as an example. Let me put aside global warming. Let's put aside climate change for just a moment. The news that we get here in the coastal areas, and even where you're living is still somewhat coastal, is quite distinct from that which might be happening in the heartland or elsewhere in the world. The view that we have about the future of the world may not be reality as I see it. Remember, Katie, remember that Mauricio said he never, even though he grew up in a developing country and he grew up where the poverty rate is astronomical, he never met anyone who was miserable until he moved to the United States. That is very telling. So there are people who are living in abject poverty who might actually have the experience of life being valuable, peaceful, enjoyable, fulfilling. And there are people who live in highly sanitized, highly industrialized, highly medicinized environments who may be miserable, who say, you don't know the facts, but I'm not sure. What are the facts?
I don't even know, for me, it's the facts as much as dialogue I'm having with people, seeing actual violence on news feeds, or, I mean, maybe that is totally fake, but even, you know, I think there's the reality of what your life is. And I think that is very important. And then I think there's also a reality of what the world is feeling as a whole. And that could be fabricated too, right? But it's still, it's not that it's not there. And it could be very well be that some people in poverty are happy and don't feel miserable. Yet I still feel poverty shouldn't exist. Like, the fact that somebody has to struggle for food and is happy still bothers me. I'm glad you're happy. That's really actually something that I should take to heart and realize that I have no reason not to be happy if you can be happy. But I don't like the fact that you're struggling for food, or I don't like the fact that you feel isolated, even if your isolation is a product of something in your head that might be based on a untruth. The fact is, it's remaining there, right? And so I don't know. I think I'm struggling. I always feel like I'm struggling with that idea of seeing the world and then also seeing my own world. I mean, we've talked about this before, but again, going back to the idea that it doesn't mean that it's not perfect, that there's something wrong with it, but I can still see the problem. It's like we don't have words. I don't even saying the word problem means to you probably that there's something imperfect. But I'm seeing it as a disconnect or something that I don't like, and I want to help.
People right now who are calling for defunding the police, or who have actually demonized police forces in the United States, will show you videos and case histories of abominational acts, okay? And they will present that to you, that it is a systemic problem. And they will cause you, and when I say you, I mean they will cause a person to be alarmed and worried that we must have a revamping or a revisiting. At the very least, we need to revisit the institution of policing. And they will tell you that that's based on facts. The United States, as I know it, has more than 300 million people in it. And case after case after case, there could be a really lengthy list. But when you measure that compared to the population and the constant flux of people in and out of the United States, those numbers are going to be minuscule. But I'm going somewhere with this. I remember when the Twin Towers fell. Our brothers and sisters on the right and our brothers and sisters that call themselves conservative began to have the conversation about fear and protection and arming ourselves. Our sisters and brothers on the left and the liberal wings said, do not judge an entire group of people based upon the abominations of a few. I remember very clearly the left and the liberal were saying, do not judge people in a particular religion or from a particular region based upon the actions, the abominations of a few. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
But the world I see now is that we are judging all of our brothers and sisters who wear blue based upon the abominations of some. I find that to be ironic and a bit worrisome.
I agree. I'm trying to now combine that with our thoughts before.
let me see if I can close the loop. The point being that what I think may be factual really may be based on a cumulative gathering of a particular viewpoint and not necessarily based upon. I can actually view the world as being worrisome and in trouble, but I have to slow down because biologically my heart and my soul is telling me that the information that is getting my attention right now is skewed in a particular way. It's skewed to alarm me and to scare me.
Yeah, you know, I've been
And Katie,
struggling.
if that's true, there's got to be a counter to it. That means there must be an entire world that is also skewed to cause me to be peaceful and joyful.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if those are necessary opposing views. I'm struggling because it's so complicated, and I like numbers when I'm lost. I figure, even though I'm horrible at math, I like looking at like numbers because it takes away the emotion for a bit, you know? And I see the numbers in everything you say with the police stuff. Like, I get it. The numbers, they take away a bit of the emotion, but yet on an emotional level, it's a perspective seen by different people in different ways based on where they lived, based on their skin color, based on these views that I do agree are being manipulated by the media, and thus we are getting a different umbrella. And I do wish that we could talk about it all in a way that where we won't be judged. And that is a struggle I feel I'm struggling with, is this idea of, can we look at all parts of this puzzle? And if we overstep or if we are wrong, do not take it as me being an evil person or like that. It's like how we're talking right now. It's like a dialogue. And I don't know. It's hard for me. I'm still struggling on where it all fits because some of it makes so much logical sense, and then some of it makes historical sense, and some of it means like makes emotional sense for me. And there has to be an intersection somewhere, but I worry that the people that are in the super emotional camp are not seeing the factual camp sometimes because it's going against the emotion. But I also think the factual side doesn't see the emotion and devalues that. So it's very, very tricky. But I think that the end of this, though, we have to go through it together. We have to open our dialogue, and we have to be okay with people being wrong, people stumbling, people falling. And the counter cannot be attack on your moral character. Because right now, if you question what you're questioning, you can be called a racist or ignorant at best. And that shuts down the conversation, right? And I wish that wasn't there. I wish we could get through to a place where we see clarity on these topics without the go-to response being an attack on your character as a person who is just questioning the narrative. And that, you know, brings me back to the topic that I wanted to initially talk about, which we probably won't today because we're already at a half hour. But I did want to talk about our fixation with identity, which I think plays a big role into this skewed nature of our attachment to being something, particularly our attachments to being something that's immutable, something we're born with. Like, I get attachments to the Center for Spiritual Living. I chose to attach myself to these people because I'm in alignment with their belief system on the world. But me being a female, me being white, me being heterosexual, me being any of those things are just kind of a product of me being born into this world. And to me, I don't like that identity politics. Like, even somebody the other day said, "Oh, I wish it would just be a young female president." And I'm like, no, I would never want to become something because based on these immutable facts. I want us to somehow move beyond that. Yet I know the historical context is holding us back. But to me, it's all based on a fallacy, and the root of it is false. Like, there is no weight in these things that should be used in the way it's being used right now. So that's a whole
May I
nother
add?
podcast, probably.
It seems that you're the one who's putting weight to it.
Well, I'm putting weight against the narrative that it has weight right now. The
And I don't
narrative,
have these.
right?
From my view, life is simply it's simply experiential. So the reason why I might be in physical form is so that I can experience what I cannot experience in intellectual or head form or in the ethers. So I must be down in the physicality in order to experience hot and cold, sharp, pain, joy. Those things are contrast. So life is all about contrast. And when I hear people who well, identify as gay, straight, black, white, brown, male, female, hetero, homo, as you wrote in your Facebook posting. I don't see them as either desirable or undesirable, that there's anything good or bad or wrong about it. It's just one particular way of viewing this thing about physicality and contrast.
I agree. I don't see anything innate in those qualities. But what I do see is that we've constructed something from our human mind to put qualities into them of which we live by. So we are constructing basically a wobbly house based on a foundation that has no inherent truth. And then we're fighting about it. We are rioting. We're yelling at police. We are up in arms. And then we want to counter it through something called anti-racism, which uses the opposite, but it's still attached to racial identity. And yep. That is where I see the problem in that we're using the same shady foundation that built up actual racism to then build up anti-racism. And if it has a faulty foundation, which to me it does, because I truly don't believe there is anything inherent in all of those immutable qualities, how do we use the same tool that built up the hatred to then take down the hatred? It doesn't make sense to me. And I think it limits our ability to express. If I have to act a certain way because I'm part of the female group, if I'm part of the womanhood, do I necessarily have to wear that pussy hat and go out and protest? Do I have to align myself with this group of what it means to be a good female? And if I don't, am I kicked out of that group? Am I stifled as an individual now because I am no longer choosing to be the group that I guess I am? And that goes for all of these immutable qualities, right? And I think there's a fundamental flaw here that's causing a lot of this trouble.
Go on.
And that's what I'm seeing. And that's why I'm speaking out against it. It's not, and in a way I am using the weight of our qualities because I want to highlight the flaw in it. And until somebody does sort of question these things, and these things are hard to question because they're not popular right now. Like they're
not. But that's not true. That's not true.
To question out loud.
That's not true.
No. Okay.
No, they're very popular, but they're not popular with the people who currently have the bullhorn.
Right.
So you have to go looking for it, but you will find that there's a silent majority that's talking about the normality of life as it is. And that's partially why I'm rather peaceful at this point, because I do have the awareness that most of our media, most of the broadcast is coming from a particular bend. But there's another side to the bend that is quite peaceful and contented. Do you know the social experimentation of, you know, we've talked about everybody agrees, I mean, almost everybody, unless you're just insane, agrees with the importance, no, with the mandate of equality of opportunity for all beings. However, equality of outcome, egalitarian of outcome, is not necessarily the best way to go, because if everybody was going to get guaranteed the same thing, then there would be no reason to strive. We would live in a world of gray. There would be no creativity, no newness. Now, there are, if you look at the Scandinavian countries, for example, I don't remember which one of the countries, so forgive me for my ignorance there, but they have mandated such that as men and women became more guaranteed equality of outcome, male and female behaviors became more distinct. So as the equality of outcome became a mandate where men and women have the same jobs, same amount of money, same, I realize what I just said could create trouble. Let me erase that. As there is forced and mandated push for guaranteed outcome, the natural differences between men and women in those countries began to be more distinct and more divided. It's fascinating. And by the way, the proof is there and the studies are in. This is not an argument. This is measurable. So as you try to force an outcome, people's natural behaviors will cause them to be drawn more and more toward people who look like them, act like them, and speak like them.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if what I just said made any sense, but I'll send you the
I
link
do.
to that stuff.
Yes,
It is
I mean it.
really, fascinating.
I keep wanting to simplify everything, you know, like it gets so convoluted and complicated. And in the end, it's like I'm fighting for individuality under the premise that we fully as individuals need to express in the most authentic way possible for us to be as a collective healthier. So the individual plays an important role in the collective health. So it seems almost contradictory that I always talk about oneness and we are one, and we are. But we are one in the sense that we have to lift up each other's individualness. And group identity, to me, gets in the way of that blossoming. And I want to figure out how, and maybe this is the spiritual, you know, part of the involution where Hestia went inside to create her own flame, her own home, is to recognize within your own self who you truly are beyond these group identity labels, because they're holding you back from a spiritual blossoming that I think is necessary and needed for a harmonious collective world to work. And I do want everybody to have equal opportunity. And I don't think, like you're saying, anything forced is just not going to work. Nature itself doesn't have equal outcomes of things. It's just not how it works. It's messier than that. But if we can hold in our hearts, in our love, in our heart space, the expression of how others want to express, and that could be however you want to express, that's your individual divine nature coming through. And it has nothing to do with your race. It has nothing to do with your sexuality. It has nothing to do with any of those things. It's deeper than that. And we're missing that. And we're fighting all this stuff on the basis of these superficial fallacies. And I think that's where I would like us to get. It's like we're reducing everything into this box. And I don't want the box to exist.
You know, while you were speaking, I was realizing if there's anything that unsettles me at this stage more than anything, which is my call to personal action, personal exploration and practice, is that in much of the narrative that's the headlines right now, there is a yelling and a screaming of ungratitude. There are people who are screaming, the world is a place for which we should not be grateful. And that's probably what could harm me the most, is if I buy into that narrative. Mm. And that's when, and people may have a reason to be broadcasting that, and they may not. But what's occurring for me is I need to slow down and do my own work so that I can be grateful for the world exactly as it is right now. And that's where newness will be born.
I like that.
Me too.
And one more, can I add one more thing?
Yes, please do. You should have the last word.
Because I want to bring it back to Tess. I wanted to tell a very quick story, which gives light to this inherent divine nature that we all have that I think we should all strive to connect to and forget about the labels. Have you ever had a moment where you just look into someone's eyes? No words are spoken, but it's like you're diving into each other's souls.
Yes.
I had that with Tess. I was just looking at her and I was thinking, you know, there was no real words. It was just like, I love this human so much. Like I can see into her little heart and it's just so beautiful. And I didn't know that she would pick up on it, but she looked back at me, you know, we're having that connection. She's like, Mom, I can tell you see love in me. And I was like, oh,
wow.
Yes. I see love in you. And like, that's it. Like, that's just, if I could wrap everything up in a tiny little nut and make everybody in the world see it, that is it. Like, that is us. That's all of us have this connection. And I don't want us to view each other as the other, as evil, as less than. Like, we are like, so, I just like want to shake everybody and tell them this and make them feel it. So anyway, I'll leave you with that. I just thought I was really moved that she could pick up on that. It was no, there was no verbal cues. It was just this deep dive eye contact. And I thought,
wow.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I love you. And thank you for the talk.
I can tell.
And
I love you too.
Love you. Tell hi, Mauricio hi for me. And
back to
we'll
John
talk soon.
And okay. Noah and Tess.
Yes. All right.
Bye.
Bye.